Let's go back.
Sorry.
This is awesome.
Teaching us. I'm sorry.
Can I ask?
Yes, go ahead.
When the children have the opportunity to make another studio seat, does the same principle apply? Do they have to put it out there to reach the benefit?
Yes. Now, it doesn't necessarily have to go to YouTube. But it's got to be the family or their friends, or it's got to come out of them. It's got to go out to somebody. Absolutely. And I don't know all of the psychology of that, but there really is something in the psychology literature that says putting it out into the world has a different effect than just thinking about it. It really is different. It's a great question. Other questions at this point before I keep going? Yes?
Kind of along those lines, because my children love to create videos, but they're rather obsessed with uploading them to YouTube and wanting external validation, and I won't allow that because there's just so much pedophilia. But there's really, like, butting heads on that, and they're like, that's the only way it's going to count, is if everyone can see it. But I don't know. So maybe I just make it private so just our family can see it. Maybe. So I'm trying to find that balance that they want to create, to share what they're creating.
Yeah.
Without it being...
Your fear is that someone's going to contact them because it's out there? Is that kind of the fear?
Not necessarily. It's just, I have two friends who worked like in the special crimes unit, and the amount of videos that are just like normal videos that people use in pedophilia is just, it's really very scary how much, like even something like so innocent of them just showing their shoulders or whatever ends up in these very dark websites.
Yeah.
And so we're kind of protective of what videos we want the general public to see, but they think that the only way their videos will count is if they can get, you know, all of these likes. But if you look at the demographics of who's liking these kids' videos, they're usually men from 40 to 70, right? Why would they be interested in a six-year-old doing this? And so anyway, so I really struggle with how do you protect them from not being consumption, you know, to be used in that way,
yeah,
versus them expressing themselves.
No, it's a great comment. I don't know, you know, obviously you have to do what you do to protect your kids. I'm not saying anything about that. But find a way for them to be able to put it out somewhere. There really is some great the great power in that and the ability to put that out there. And in addition to that, it's not the validation. It's the idea, I guess it kind of is validation, but it's the idea that I can create and others can benefit. There's a lot of power in the idea of creating value. And so turning that into a conversation about value creation of, hey, so all of our kids, how many of you guys have kids that want to be influencers? Like, yeah? Okay. So it's most of them, right? In fact, it was really interesting. I had a graph in another presentation about, in China, the most desired job is like astronaut, engineer, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. In the United States, YouTube influencer is number one. Like, everybody wants to be a YouTuber. It's just what they want to do. But what they don't understand is that being a YouTube influencer is just an action in value creation. People become influencers. There are some like quick one-hit wonders, but like the big influencers, like Mr. Beast, the biggest person on YouTube, he has incredible value, entertainment value. He spends millions and millions of dollars on each of his videos to create a video that is a desired entertainment value. We have to help our kids understand, hey, it's fine to want to be an influencer. But it's just a business. It's another business. It's a value creation endeavor. How are you creating value for someone else that they can then consume? And so it's a great opportunity, and I know that's not an answer to your question, but it's a great opportunity to switch that to some other principles and teach more along the way as you're going through that. Any other questions? Yes?
Just have a thought on this. This is something I've been kind of dealing with just family and other things. But as far as like the idea of putting something out there and having that be a difference, have a difference in whether you just produce it and it's only you that see it. So it seems like one of the core things we as human beings really need and we strive for is a feeling of contribution, right? So when we're putting something out there, then we are contributing. There is something that we are having an impact on, where we just can't have that if we make it and hide it for ourselves, right? We're not actually contributing to something else. So I just think that's the way that I view that anyways. It seems to fit pretty well.
That's a great comment, and it's such a real thing. Yeah.
I was just thinking about the keynote speaker this morning in relation to that as well. I think that there's two sides to the influencer thing. I think when my kids have talked about wanting to be influencers or stuff, it's because they want to play all day and get set free stuff and then have all the love. It's not the value creation.
Yep.
So maybe that's a way to go about it, is to just say, what value are you even providing to the world? You're just screwing around on a video camera, and then you think you're hilarious, so everyone else should think you're hilarious, too. It's very selfish-based, which is easy for all of us to be, right? Like, I would love people to send me makeup all the time. That would be awesome. But, like, that's not helping the world, right? Versus helping somebody learn something new.
That's perfect. Yeah. And I wanted to come back to this contribution thing just a little bit, because that's such a real thing. One of the biggest concerns with like the ad, as we move into this world where AI does so much for us and robotics and all those things start to change, one of the biggest concerns that we have, and even the people like Sam Altman, who's the CEO at ChatGPT, one of the biggest AI engines out there, humans have a natural need to contribute and to provide value and to work and to create. If we truly drop into this world where nobody does anything anymore because it's all done by something else, by this whatever it is, in a very real sense, that will probably be the end of humanity, because humans need to create and contribute. And so we have to continue to carve out areas where we can be creative, where we can solve problems, where we can contribute to the world. And this is backed up with some data as well. It's really interesting what happens when people retire. I don't know if you guys have ever looked at the morbidity data on people that retire. I see a few shaking heads. When people retire early, or they stop, and when retire, it's like retire and stop doing anything. Like they golf all day and they watch movies all day. They die 3 years earlier than those who just continue working. So people that retire at 65 compared to those who retire at 72, the 65-year-olds, when they just stop, they die 3 years older than those who retire at 72. They literally lose some of that vitality for life because they are not contributing and doing those things. So it is a very, very real human need that we have. So let me just talk to you guys a little bit about what we do in our family. So with our kids' days and our days, there's a certain amount of time that goes to just things that have to be done. They have to, you know, the kids have to do schoolwork, they got to do their chores, they got to eat, they have to go do music lessons, etc., etc., etc. But there's also a certain amount of time that we would call free time. Time that's not programmed, it's not nothing's expected of them. We take those total free hours and we say, of those total free hours, a certain amount of that has to be in production. You have to be doing some productive activity. We don't care what it is. You can be programming. You can be programming something. You can be creating music or videos. You can be outside exercising and creating. You know, like there's all of these things that we could be doing to be productive. As our kids get older, so when they're about, by the time they're 16 or 17, we expect of their free time about 40% of that time to go towards productive activities. Now that's just something that we've established. There's no information. I wish there were some studies out there to validate some of this, of like what that magic time is. No one's really doing that work. But we have found that about 40% seems to be, for our family, amount of time that is helpful and beneficial and also productive. Like, we get a lot of great results out of this. So how do we do that? And it's pretty simple. We have what's called a rules and responsibilities chart. So this is kind of outside of the basis of what we're doing. What we do is we break down for our kids each age group. So for 0 to 2, 3 to 6, 7 to 8, 9 to 11, etc., all the way down to 18, we have certain behaviors that we would expect of those of that group of kids. So like an example here, I expect my 9 to 11-year-old to be able to complete household responsibilities and schoolwork without oversight. So we don't have to like get after you and take care of that. And inside of that, starting at age 9 to 11, we ask that 10% of their time is spent on production. And then when they become 12 to 13, it goes up to 20, 13 to 14 is 30, and 15, 16 and above is that 40%. What we do then to try to help them have an incentive to produce is how the rights and privileges document works is, when they do these behaviors, they get these privileges and responsibilities. So if they do their production during the day to do all of that, then their bedtime is very different. So my 9 to 11 years have an 8:30 bedtime, whereas a younger kid has more like a 7 or a 6 o'clock bedtime. And so how the whole thing works is, during the day, sometimes my 9 to 11-year-old doesn't want to produce, or they throw a fit and they act like a 2-year-old, or other things happen. And in that moment, all we do is we say, okay, is that the decision you want to make? If that is, then today you are going to have your... And what that means is, is now, well, let's say 3 to 6, now you get to go to bed at 7 o'clock. And now you don't get any of these other privileges. And so we tie together the responsibilities and the privileges they get with the behaviors that they exhibit. And so they drop. You'll hear us say in our family, okay, you dropped today. You dropped to whatever it is. And our kids, so people have been in my house before, and I'll be like, okay, Keller, you dropped. And he'll freak out. And like my friends are looking like, what in the world does that mean? Like, what just happened? And it just means he gets to go to bed early, and he doesn't get to pick his snacks, and several other things happen. But we tie into that, this idea of production is very much in the center of all of that that we do. What's that?
They can also age up in your house.
You can age up in our house. Yep, so if my 9 to 11-year-old wants to act like a 16-year-old throughout that day and do all of those things, then they can stay up till 10:30 and have some of the privileges of that as well. Yep.
Just yes, a Sean. Production detail. So do you consider if a kid is playing a piece on the piano or creating their own piece, do you consider both of those production?
Yes. Yep, I would consider if they're playing it, it's coming out, that's still production. If they're listening to music, not so much. Yeah, but that would definitely be a production. Other questions?
Where'd you get your chart?
We made that. We came up with that. So, let me talk about just one more thing about production, you guys.
Can I ask a question real quick?
Yeah, go ahead.
It's reading.
Consumption. We didn't talk about it today. There are levels of consumption, and we try to ask our kids to consume at a higher level. But reading is a higher form of consumption, but it's still consumption. And actually, that's supported in the data. Even if you're reading like classics and some of the best books, it is not the same benefit as someone who is producing something for themselves. There is a bigger benefit for those individuals than even reading some of the best books out there, which is far and above, of course, reading a lot of stuff that my kids like to read sometimes, which are great, but maybe not so helpful. Yes.
So, do you have any recommendations, I guess, to inspire them? I think this is trickery. Inspire them to make it be kind of their idea. Like, I love your system, but is there any ways to kind of like help their thinking in the sense of going from consumption to production?
We generally try to start with the consumption. What do you love to consume? And could you possibly do that? Like, could you produce that? Could you be the one that does those things? That seems to be something that really, really helps. The other thing that's helped us, a few years ago, a couple of our daughters with their friend decided they were going to write the next great romance novel. Not like a princess romance novel. And so because their friend was doing it, it had powerful, powerful effects on their willingness to continue and to keep trying. They wrote like 600 pages or something like that. Never became a novel, but there's like 600 pages of story there that they worked on for about 3 years together. And so, there's a lot of those types. I would say flip consumption to production. Find things that their friends like to do. Those are really powerful tools to help them be inspired. Yeah. Let me talk about anything by Malcolm Gladwell. I love Gladwell. I think he's a great writer. But he talked about two artists, and I think it's really pertinent to what we're talking about here. Oh, now I really have gone over. Lindsay, you just stopped. You should have supposed to stop.
I feel bad.
Picasso, we all know who Picasso is. Picasso was this prolific artist. Picasso created thousands and thousands and thousands of paintings, and many of them very popular when he was very young. By the time he was 18, 19, Picasso was already a world-known artist. He was so unique and so different. And so he had like a lot of this self-validation because what he was putting out and producing was just accepted and loved by the world. There was another painter at the same time as Picasso. His name was Cézanne. And Cézanne, if you took the value of all of Picasso's paintings and compared them to the value of all of Cézanne's paintings, now they're about the same. He created a lot of paintings worth a lot of money as well. But Cézanne was unique. Cézanne, for most of his life, he was producing, but very, very slowly. He was really methodical. This particular painting, he sat with this woman over 150 different times before he finally, and he never actually put this out as a finished piece. He was meticulous. He had this idea of what he wanted it to look like, and so he just kept trying over and over and over and over. And during his life, he was never... During most of his life, he was never a famous artist. In fact, it was so bad that he had a rich benefactor who was like, I like your paintings, I'll just pay for you to live so you can keep painting. And so for his whole life, he was just supported by this rich benefactor, and he was able to continue being a painter, never having really any success until the very, very end of his life. And then after he died, of course, as oftentimes happens with artists, he became very famous. But what's interesting about that, you guys, is your kids are going to want to produce things that you don't understand, that you think are a waste of time. You think they're stupid. And you're like, I don't know what you're doing. I don't know why you're doing it. But the point of Cézanne is that sometimes it takes a long time for them to really develop the skills, develop the passion to create great things. So we can't cut them off early. We've got to be the rich benefactor for a while. And when it comes to their production, not literally supporting them for their whole lives, that's not what I'm advocating, but I am advocating as far as our support and our love and our, hey, keep trying, keep doing, keep failing, keep moving forward, we have to be the rich benefactor. Because sometimes it will take them a long time. They might not all be Picasso, some of them might be Cézanne, and that's totally fine. We have to be the ones to help them find that inner beauty and that inner passion. And if we can do that, they will produce beautiful things as well. You guys, okay, truly this time, thank you for being here. I really appreciate it.